Good evening. For those of you who haven't been here of any of this series, just to explain, we're working our way through the 12 not to be called minor prophets. The 12 prophets are these books that come at the end of the Old Testament, and we've reached Habakkuk. The two H's actually come one after the other. We are doing them in a slightly different order just to confuse everyone on the order they appear in the Bible, in case you're trying to keep up and keep along. But this week we are on to the book of Habakkuk. Linda, thank you. A few months ago, I found myself in a room that looked very much like this one. And just to explain, before I go any further with this story, I was there as a witness. This is not some big reveal about something that's just happened in my recent history. I was there as a witness for something that I witnessed, clearly. I was not there as a defendant or anything like that. Just to make that clear, if you forget everything else about this story, please remember that part. Briefly, what happened, how I ended up in this in a courtroom much like this one, was that one day my wife Debs and I were out in a park, and something was going on, and we heard a bit of shouting, and we had this sort of moment. We both looked at each other, and we had this kind of unspoken thing of, should we go and have a look and see what's going on? It seems a bit serious. And we both kind of agreed, and we both went over. And it turns out that what was going on was a bit serious, and things progressed, and fortunately it stopped at that point, but we deemed it serious enough that us and some passerbys rang the police, and they got involved, and we were sort of questioned as witnesses and the whole thing. I don't know if anyone's been involved in this type of thing, but it was quite a long process of the police coming and taking our statements and us having to do all the official things like that. And then eventually it ended up at court, and we were asked to go back to court and recount our statements in this situation. It's quite a strange situation if anyone's been in this. I'm not going to necessarily ask for everyone who's been in the court, but maybe you've been in the same sort of situation as me. It is a very kind of unnerving situation where you're sat in this courtroom, you're being questioned by the lawyers for the defence and the prosecution, if you like, and you're faced with the three magistrates who sit very much like they're sat there to your side, and you're also having to look across to the people who are the defendants and see them. So the whole thing is quite a strange situation. I don't want to make out that I'm sort of some sort of have-a-go hero, and this is a regular occurrence in my life. This is about the only time anything like this has happened to me. So we had this court case. We were kept in the waiting room, and then we had our time to recount and to be questioned and cross-questioned. And then we went away, and that's about our involvement, until a letter arrived through the post a few weeks later. We'd been told that this would happen. We weren't there for the verdict at the end of the case, and we'd been told that we'd hear about it this way. And this letter arrives, and it turns out that the verdict in the case wasn't quite what we thought it might be. Things didn't quite go the way we thought the case might go. And it was a bit confusing, and it was actually a bit of a head-scratching thing for my wife and I, because we were two of the witnesses, and we kind of wondered, actually, did we not do our job as witnesses? Did we, you know, get our questions wrong or whatever? And you sort of ask yourself these kind of questions. Hopefully, overall, the whole situation turned out. And this is not a sort of attack on our justice system. I have no idea how the magistrates can sit there and weigh up all the things they hear and try and decide the best way to resolve this case, the best way to make a verdict so that justice is done, but the people are treated fairly, and all these sorts of things. I'm very much respectful of those people who, as far as I understand, give it their time for free to do this sort of thing. So it's not attacking that, but it did make my wife and I kind of question the injustice of it. And particularly once we've seen this situation, when you're exposed to a situation like that, you kind of think, well, actually, we happen to be in that place when this was going on. That's probably not an uncommon situation. There's other people who've been involved in these types of situations. It starts to think a bit wider. And we have kids, and it kind of made us think, you know, if our kids were in that situation, you know, you ask yourself those sorts of questions. So maybe for some of us, when we think about the ideas of injustice, we have different things. That's quite a personal one to me, and I've not really thought about it too much before, but when you're met with that situation, you actually think, well, what is the justice in that situation? How should that have turned out? Was it the right verdict? Did things turn out the way they should have done? We clearly live in a world where there's wrongdoing, there's bad deeds that go unpunished, there's injustice. The righteous suffer and the bad prosper is another way of putting it. And actually, that's what we see here in Habakkuk. Next slide, please, Linda. Basically, the book of Habakkuk boils down to a set of questions and answers. In a way, actually, and Celia mentioned it as well, discussion is another way of thinking about it. It's quite a private conversation in some ways between Habakkuk calling out quite plainly to God questions, complaints they're labelled as in our Bible, and God answering those. It starts off with the one in the beginning, Habakkuk 1. If you don't have it open in your pew Bibles, you might want to turn to it. Habakkuk 1, verses 2 and 3 is Habakkuk's first complaint. And he says this in verses 2 and 3. How long, Lord, must I call for help, but you do not listen? Or cry out to you, violence, but you do not save? Why do you make me look at injustice? Why do you tolerate wrongdoing? Destruction and violence are before me. There is strife and conflict abounds. And maybe some of those words ring true for us, those complaints, those questioning. There is strife in our world. Wrongness does abound. We only have to turn on our news on a regular basis to see some of these things going on. The poor in our world treated badly. People getting away with things that they should be punished for. So I think there's some lessons we can learn from this really interesting interaction. The first one, Linda, is that actually it's okay. Brilliant. It's okay to question God. We have this pattern here of Habakkuk who's questioning God, not in an impertinent way. He's clearly questioning something that's from his heart. He's not questioning for the sake of it. He's questioning because he's struggling with this. He's seeing this injustice going on around him in the land of Judah. He's seeing the wrongdoing that isn't being punished. And he's crying out to God these questions. Complaints, they're labelled as, maybe in our Bible, is a better word for them. God, what are you doing? God, what's going on? And maybe some of us have these similar questions. Based on Habakkuk's example, I think it's clear that God is okay with this type of honest and heartfelt questioning. I don't think it would be included as a book in the Bible if it wasn't something we should learn from the example of it. Habakkuk was pouring out his heart to God, taking something that he was wrestling with and actually being honest and open with God about it, having a deep, meaningful communication with him in his prayers. And I think the other way we know it's so God was okay with it, because God answers his questions twice. Habakkuk complains twice, God answers twice. We see that in the headings of the Bible. Habakkuk's complaint, the Lord's answer. Habakkuk's second complaint, the Lord's second answer. He listens, God listens and responds and explains to Habakkuk what he's going to do. Which I think brings us on to another lesson. Thanks, Linda. God listens and replies. God listens and replies. We can absolutely rely on the fact that God replies. God is a God who cares about us. God is a God who listens to us. God isn't like this maybe slightly autobiographical parent who, when his children come up to him and he happens to be watching the England-Scotland rugby game on TV and is very engrossed because England are losing and it's not going well. This may have happened a week or so ago. God is not like this parent who, when his children come up to him, ignores their questions and they have to trot up and ask their mother. God isn't that sort of parent. God listens to us. God is available. God listens to our prayers. God listens to our cries. God listens to our questions. Which brings us on to the third point, which is up there. God doesn't always answer in the way we'd like. Just look at how God responds in Habakkuk 1, 5 and 6. Habakkuk complained about the injustice in the land of Judah, and God's response, the Lord's answer in verses 5 and 6, say this: Look at the nations and watch and be utterly amazed. For I am going to do something in your days that you would not believe even if you were told. I am raising up the Babylonians, that ruthless and impetuous people who swept across the whole earth to seize dwellings not their own. You can kind of imagine what might have been going through Habakkuk's mind when he first heard this. I know if it was me in the situation, I'd be thinking something like this: Hang on, God, are you saying you're using the Babylonians to do this? The Babylonians are worse than the problem. The Babylonians are the evil empire, if you like, at that time. The Babylonians are the dominant power, and they didn't get that way through being nice to people. They're more wicked than anything that might have been happening in Judah. And of course God knows about the Babylonians. It's not that he's unaware of the situation. He talks about it in those verses in his reply. But it seems like God's willing to use them to sort out the situation in Judah, to sort out the injustice and corruption that's going on. we can clearly see that God doesn't always do things in the way he expects. I think it's quite interesting that he actually calls out in his verses, the Lord's answer says, I'm going to do something that you would not believe. He knows that this is an unbelievable response. He clearly says that to Habakkuk. In one of the books I was reading when I was talking about this, it said, imagine it this way, the modern equivalent is this. If we were calling out to God to say, God, the situation in Darfur is terrible. Why aren't you dealing with that injustice? There's hunger, there's starvation, it's been going on for a long time. That might be the modern equivalent of us calling out to an injustice. If God turns around and says, I know that situation is terrible, I'm going to deal with it by using North Korea. That's about the equivalent. It's about the most unexpected way God might talk about using a country to solve a situation. So Habakkuk hears God's answer. Whatever might be going through his mind, he then has a second follow-up question. Into Habakkuk 1:13 says this, in the bits that Celia read out for us earlier on. Habakkuk 1:13, Habakkuk saying to God, your eyes are too pure to look on evil. You cannot tolerate wrongdoing. Why then do you tolerate the treacherous? Why are you silent while the wicked swallow up those more righteous than themselves? And then this time God goes on to give him a fuller answer about what he's doing. And part of that is talking about exactly what he's going to do with the Babylonians once he's used them. God is using the Babylonians to work out the situation in Judah, but the Babylonians aren't getting off scot-free. God's well aware of what the Babylonians have been doing, their treachery and these things, and he's going to deal with the Babylonians separately. Thanks, Linda. Next slide. So then in this second answer from the Lord, we come on to this verse, maybe the most distinctive verse from this chapter. And it gives us an insight into how God deals with injustice. So clearly it does seem strange that God is using the Babylonians. That's probably outside of any of our understanding of how God best works in a situation. But it's God's plans in God's timings. God works in mysterious ways. And some of the songs we sang talk to that. We stand in awe, we don't know the beginning and the end, but God does. But God is very clear. He's talking about Babylonians in a way. He's saying, see, the enemy is puffed up, his desires are not upright. He's talking about the Babylonians. He understands that they're not innocent. He understands that they also need to be dealt with. He's clear that they're going to get what they deserve as well. The injustice will get sorted out. And the fulfillment of this prophecy happens. Babylonia was the dominant political force, was the dominant country in that day. And as I said before, it got there it didn't get there by nice trade agreements or anything like that. It got there by abusing the countries around it, in effect, and taking things from those countries to get there. But they were this huge empire that was beyond the might of any other country at the time, was defeated. It didn't last. God's plans in God's timings. Thanks, Linda. Next slide. So in the rest of chapter 2, there is a particular phrase of, it's not quite a crossword, is it really? But there's a phrase that fits in this pattern. Three letters, space, the word two, another word of three letters, and another word of three letters. Can anyone pick it out in the second half of chapter 2? Habakkuk chapter 2. It's in there about four or five times. Something to something something.
Woe to him who.
Thank you very much, AJ. Woe to him who. Almost every paragraph in the second half of that book starts with this phrase, woe to him who. God is saying, woe to him who. Thanks, Linda. Next slide. So we have it appear in all these places. Chapter 2, verse 6. Woe to him who piles up stolen goods and makes himself wealthy by extortion. Chapter 2, verse 9. Woe to him who builds his house by unjust gain, settling his nest on high to escape the clutches of ruin. Woe to him who builds... 2, verse 12, sorry. Woe to him who builds a city with bloodshed and establishes a town by injustice. 2, verse 15. Woe to him who gives drink to his neighbours, pouring it from the wineskin till they are drunk so that he can gaze on their naked bodies. Proper Old Testament verse there, isn't it? And 2 verse 19. Woe to him who says to wood, come to life, or to lifeless stone, wake up. Can it give guidance? It is covered with gold and silver. There is no breath in it. When God says woe to him, you know that means something significant. When the Lord's answer is clearly calling out some of the behaviour of the Babylonians, you know that's him talking about. And the verses at the end then go on to say, I am the Lord, I am powerful, and it's the implication is that he's going to deal with this. But maybe before we look at that list, and there is some strange things in that list, let's be fair, isn't there? It's not necessarily things that we might think about ourselves. Before we think about that it's only applying for the Babylonians, maybe if we describe some of these things going on here in more general terms, we might think about it differently. So the one in 2 verse 6, you could also describe as being greedy or self-indulgent. An extreme version, but greedy or self-indulgent. Chapter 2, verse 9, maybe you could describe that as being unjust or selfish. Chapter 2, verse 12, maybe you could class that as being cruel or ruthless. Chapter 2, verse 15, another way to think about that is being indecent or depraved. And chapter 2, verse 19, is talking about worshipping idols. So whilst I don't think any of these apply directly to us, maybe if we think about them in more general terms, there's something there for us to think about. Maybe sometimes our behaviour does fit in the more mild version of these categories. Do we need to ask God for forgiveness for anything we've done that can be described by these words? Greedy, self-indulgent, unjust, selfish, cruel, indecent, depraved, worshipping idols. Maybe not worshipping idols as far as building a statue, but we often talk about how worshipping idols is putting other things before God. Because God's words in these passages, in this passage, God's warnings are pretty stark. Woe to him. When God says woe to him, we want to take and listen to that. So we see in this section of Habakkuk that God will deal with injustice. Not always in the way or time we'd like. Not even always in a way or time that we understand, but God does deal with injustice. We need to have faith that God is a just God who's in control, and that ultimately, one day, all evil will be totally destroyed. Thanks, Linda. Next slide. But on to the second half of this distinctive verse, talking about the faith of the righteous, but the righteous person will live by his faithfulness. If this verse is recognisable, maybe it's from Habakkuk that you recognise it, but actually it's quoted in lots of places in the New Testament. It shows up in Romans 1:17, Galatians 3 verse 11, and maybe most distinctively in the famous passage in Hebrews on faith, where it lists the people of faith in the Bible. This verse is quoted just before it in Hebrews 10:38. So clearly this verse has been distinctive to the writers of the New Testament, and I think it should be an encouragement and distinctive to us. Our faith in God is what can help us get through times when it appears that God isn't involved. Habakkuk cried out to God for answers. God replied and gave him a prophetic vision of what's going to happen, but there was a period in between him hearing that and that actually happened. Yet Habakkuk then went on to write the third chapter that we read right back at the beginning, this amazing verse, chapter of praise, almost a psalm, like praising God. Habakkuk clearly had great faith in God and was praising God long before the events actually changed. We see this really distinctively in chapter 3, verses 17 to 19, the last section of chapter 3. Habakkuk says this, 17 to 19. Though the fig tree does not bud and there are no grapes on the vines, though the olive crop fails and the fields produce no food, though there are no sheep in the sheepfold and no cattle in the stalls, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will be joyful in God my Saviour. The sovereign Lord is my strength. He makes my feet like the feet of a deer. He enables me to tread on the heights. That's what a living faith looks like. rejoicing even when everything around him was still going wrong and these prophetic words from God hadn't come to fruition. Habakkuk still put his faith and trust in God. When there was no food, when the crop failed, when there was no sheep, all the other things he lists there, he still rejoiced in the Lord. And he still says, I will be joyful to my God, my Saviour. My prayer is that we can grow in our faith. We can learn from the example of Habakkuk, learn from the example of his communication with God, and be able to say these verses at the end. Yet I will rejoice in the Lord, I will be joyful in God, my Saviour. I want to finish today by doing something a little bit different. I'm going to have a time, I want us to have a time that we can reflect. Maybe, Dorothy, while I'm doing this, could you just give out the post-it notes and the pens for me, just as I explain? We can have a bit of a time and try and model something that Habakkuk did. One of the things that struck me as distinctive was that Habakkuk had questions for God, and he asked God those questions. So in this time, the music group's going to play a song through a couple of times. If you give everyone a post-it note and a pen, thank you. And the music group's going to play a song through, and we can just sit and listen to the music playing. And I want to give us a chance to maybe write a question to God. Maybe you're struck by the questions that Habakkuk was asking in these passages. Maybe that rings true with you. Maybe it's something God's put on your heart over the last few weeks or months and you're struggling with it. Maybe it's a confusion you have about something that God is doing and you're confused why he's doing it. I don't want to force it. If you genuinely don't have a question for God, that's fine. I don't want everyone to feel bad. They can't think of something off the top of their head. Maybe if that's the case for you, you can just read through some of the verses in Habakkuk and see what they say to you. But we're going to take about 5 minutes while the music group plays. I want you to have a chance to write a question to God, and then following the example of Habakkuk even more, is spend some time praying and see how God might answer that question. Again, I don't expect it to always happen. Habakkuk, in his verse, is very clear that he would pray and wait. He talks about waiting on the battlements till God gives an answer. I don't expect God to magically answer everyone's question within 5 minutes, although he could do that clearly. But I want us to have a chance to write down a question for God, whatever God might have us on our hearts, and see what God says. I'm going to leave the music group to pray, and when leave the music group to play. And then at the end of that, Celia's going to stand up and carry on with communion. If you don't have a pen and a post-it note, please put your hand up.